Think you know how to party? Well, science does. In fact, there are nerds out there that spend their whole lives researching the ins and outs of sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
But don't take this nerd's word for it. In the Party Science Podcast, we break down the research behind a good time and a great time.
I'm Dr. Joel Rindelob, a real-life scientific researcher.
And I'm comedian Courtney Dawson, a real-life party girl.
And together, we talk to world experts in psychedelics.
Look at topics like the physiology of squirting and show you how science parties harder than you thought possible.
Stay tuned every Wednesday for a new episode scientifically proven to rock your dome.
This is a Frank Podcast.
Welcome back to week something. I don't even know. It's Honest to Who. It is, you've seen it in the title. This week is all about Andrew Mulligan, my good friend, I want to say unofficial mentor, but you know, I don't want to put labels to it. Andrew has been an amazing asset to me growing in the media game, and also he's got so many stories. He's been around, like he does radio, he does TV, he does ads, he does all these other, it's almost like he's got too many fingers and too many pies, but he balances it out really well. If you're looking for a podcast to, you know, talk about balance and how to get things sorted and how to identify and how to also just find accountability, I suppose, this is the podcast for you. And if you haven't already, make sure that you either go, if you're listening to this, give us a review, man. Stop it, eh? Stop fucking around. I've had enough. We need 5 stars. Just like, hey, you give your Uber 5 stars. Why can't you give me 5 stars? I know how many of you are listening to this, and I know how many have not done reviews. Hey, I'm looking for you. And if you are watching this on YouTube, subscribe, all that stuff. It is on YouTube as well. Subscribe, like, comment, all that stuff that KSI and that say, do all that shit too. Anyway, enough of me. Let's get into the potty. Sweet, Miles. Thank you, brother. Thank you so much.
Hey, no, thank you, man.
With the shake, we're getting in there. Fuck.
Yeah, we're going to go. Mm. I know, because I see you, like, you're everywhere now. And you're always on my phone.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
That's the algorithm.
Yeah, I don't want to be.
No, you've mastered the algorithm.
I don't know if this is a good thing or not.
But this is good, man, because you're giving me snackable, bite-sized content.
Okay. Yeah, but still, you know, you can't eat too much of the same thing. You get a bit sick of it sometimes. That's what I'm worried about.
No, don't worry about that, man.
Oh, thank you, man. Thanks for coming in.
No, thank you for having me, genuinely.
It's cool because, like, you know, fucking, you know, our universe has collided with Krugger's Wild stuff. So it's cool that we get to sit down and really kind of chop it up, I suppose.
I know. It's been cool because I think we talk a lot online together, but we're passing ships.
Yeah.
Like, we did the basketball podcast, Straight Dribble. Let's bring that back.
Do we? Why not?
But we were always just talking hoops, which I love.
Yeah.
And you obviously love as well.
I do.
But then we never really sat down and had a decent corridor until recently.
Because I think, we followed each other on, here's me going into my bag now. We followed each other on Twitter and then my Twitter got taken away. That's what happened. And then I thought that you were like, this motherfucker blocked me, like, or something like that. I was like, this guy, you know, those internet beefs. And I was like, oh no, I hope Moles doesn't think.
No.
Now we're best friends forever now.
Yeah, we're BFFs.
Yeah.
That was probably about the time that I just kind of gave up on Twitter and I didn't bother pursuing what Twitter was turning into, because it just turned into, like, there was a tipping point and all the dick bags came out and then were in your mentions and replies and they were pulling you up on the jokes you're making. I was like, what are you doing? Get out of here.
Was that like with that era? Because, man, when Twitter was, I don't want to say pure, but when it first came out, it was so fucking fun.
It was fun.
You could live tweet games, you could do whatever. And then it just got a bit like off. All the social justice warriors came out. And then
yeah, there was that. But there's also the guys and girls who would bag Twitter. I mean, what are you on Twitter for? And then they'd realize that, everyone is actually on Twitter. I'm going to join. But then brought their dick bag attitude with them.
It came from MySpace. What was the other one? There was one where it was just like GIFs all the time. And there was a whole bunch of people that came. I know someone's going to fucking message it to me.
Is it Vine?
Nah, Vine was good.
Vine was fun.
It was before Vine.
I got blocked from Vine by the BCCI. Because I was taking like cricket content and putting it up on my Vine. And I was making some good, I got good traction. I got one of my Vines made it onto Grantland, Simmons.
Yeah.
Bill Simmons' old website, and it was the former Wizards coach, and I can't remember his name now.
Before him.
And he kept getting the clipboard upside down and timeouts. Oh. And I was like, I saw it again, and I put it in. I put it up, and I think I tagged Grantland, or was, I used the right hashtag, and they used it in their thing again, in their, hey, he's done it again. It was me. Hey, guys, so-and-so has done it again with his clipboard. And he's like, oh, no, it's this way. In an NBA game.
Did you, was that the most viral thing, moment that you've ever had online?
Out of my own doing, probably.
Yeah.
But then when I said Juggernaut on TV, that was when I went viral for all the wrong reasons. It's triggering because your audio guy, Jake, we just met again. His chair has Juggernaut on the back of it.
Yeah.
And I thought, it's everywhere. I can't escape it.
For those people that don't know, what was that?
Oh, so I was at a Super Rugby game and I was doing the fronting, and at halftime you have walk-off interviews that you get a player. And they're always awkward. Nobody really enjoys them. Nobody really likes them. I don't mind them. I think they're quite good. I'm one of the few. And I can't remember the captain's name on the Stormers, but his English was a second language. He was fluent in Afrikaans. And my question was, they were getting pumped by the Saders. That was like 33-6 at halftime or something.
Shit.
And I thought it was a really good question. I was thinking, because I was sweating bullets, because you get one opportunity, you can't stuff it up. There's less than a minute you get with this person. You're like, two questions, one if it goes long. And my question was going to be, how do you stop a juggernaut like the Crusaders?
Mm.
But I had audio latency in my ear, because what had happened is there's this dead zone, which was Jade Stadium back then, and the in goal, and the radio mics weren't working that properly.
Okay.
And so the soundie got me a hard cabled mic, but plugged it into the back of the Steadicam we were using, therefore creating this loop. And Jake, our audio guy, he knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, fuck, he's...
Because it meant that I had my voice coming back in like a split second, the audio latency through me. So I sounded like I was drunk.
And when you put the word juggernaut in there.
Juggernaut.
This is juggernaut.
And the Stormers captain was like, who? I said, the Crusaders. The Crusaders, how do you stop them? And I can't remember what happened, but anyway, I had to turn to camera and go, it's a massacre here in Christchurch. And I was thinking at the time, is anyone else hearing this? Is it just me? And I should have had the wherewithal to pull my earpiece out, but because I was so worried about executing the question in the interview at the same time, you're not afforded that luxury.
I need to find this video.
You cannot find it.
Okay.
They've washed it. Sky have got rid of it somehow. Mm-hmm. It's not on YouTube anymore.
I've got to.
I think it's in the hard drive at Crowd.
I could find some. I know people that know people.
You know people. If anyone can find it, it's you.
Yeah. Have you seen my, do you know my viral, most viral thing?
Is your viral one with the kid?
No. Ooh.
The Warriors fan?
No, I mean with an athlete?
No.
No. Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant retweeted me.
He retweeted you?
He retweeted me, man. It would have been about...
Respect. Right. What did you tweet?
So it was when his daughter's team got beaten in a final or something
GG?
Like that. Yeah, GG. Yeah. And then the year after, it was like they beat that team, they pumped that team, right? And I was like, and all these people in the comments like, why would you take a photo? You beat them by 70 something. And I just wrote, man, if I had 1% of that mama mentality, life would be so much easier for me. And then he just retweeted it.
Yes.
And I was like, that's my guy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so, out of all the mentions.
I know, because you can imagine how much he gets. So yeah, and then that was about maybe 6 months before he passed away.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was up there. So
that's when he was.
Me and Cobes are like this.
Oh man,
forever.
R.I.P.
And every year to the day, that anniversary of when that came out, I'll chuck it up just randomly.
Yeah.
Hey man, check this out.
Flex that.
That's Kobe Bryant.
I don't do that enough. Like you've got to remind people what you do.
Where
you've come from.
Because I think you like there's a lot of people in the industry that do a lot. And everyone says to me, oh, fuck, Tim, you do so much. You're everywhere. You're so busy. But I don't think – I look at you and I go, fuck, I need to be busy like you.
Yeah,
you're
right.
Like everywhere. Well, not – I mean, you got Crowd. Then you got radio in the morning.
Yeah.
Then you got Crowd. Then you got basketball. Then you've got every other – then you got fucking Rebel Sport ads. You got everything. How does – How did you maintain balance with that? Because on top of that, you got family.
Yeah, I got family. That's a great question. I have a very understanding, supportive wife who understands that I was in this. I was doing this before I met her, and I met her when I was doing this. So, in a roundabout way, that's probably the same thing, just a different way of saying it. But that's important. And she does not give a fuck what I do. She does not care. Like, she honestly, she does not. She appreciates what I do, but she's not an investor. So how was the radio? What did you do today? What kind of topics are you doing? Like, she was like, how was work? Was work good? And I'm like, yeah, work was great. We did this. And she's like, oh, that's awesome. I heard that, but that was funny. Or she'll look at our Instagram reels that we put up, and we put up a lot, and she'll be like, I like that, but that was funny. But she doesn't. Yeah, I think that's important.
Yeah.
So that's important to have a partner that appreciates and supports you.
It's almost like the point guard of the team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so when Crow was like 5 nights, and then I went down to 4 nights because we started a family, like that was full on. I was doing breakfast radio in the morning and then 7 p.m. TV at night. There weren't a lot of people doing that. And yeah. I think Hosking, I think it was Hosking was doing it. He was doing 7 Sharp and ZB. And I was like the poor man's version of doing that, because I was doing 7 p.m. TV, but on Perimeter.
You were the relatable version of
the every man's version. The every man's version. So I think Jesse Mulligan was doing like Radio New Zealand afternoons and then 7 p.m. Project until obviously very recently. But that was hectic. When I look back on that now, that was hectic. And COVID slowed that down for obviously a lot of people and everybody. So we only went down. I only did 1 night a week now, a crowd, which I love.
Because 5 nights, because I came on when we were only doing 2 nights a week at crowd. And I've said this to Rather Producer as well. Like, I don't understand how 5 nights would have worked. Like, being able to get content and push it out, get it ready for TV. And was it 30 minutes or was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, to this day, I'm just like, wow. And he was like, oh, there was a lot of like press conference stories and there was a lot of other things, but did you notice the difference changing from after COVID to this with just content quality, I suppose?
Yeah, absolutely. Like the field stories, you're afforded more time, as you know. You can flesh, you can think about a story, and you may have one story a week, you might get two, but you're not having to do them Tuesday, Wednesday, when it's like the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday shows were always the dead shows because there wasn't a lot happening in New Zealand sport. Hence why we filled it out with a lot of international stuff and like it helped that I appreciate American sport like you do more than the average Kiwi viewer does. But you would have more time. Whereas like McConey, he would have to do a story every day.
Fuck.
And whether it was either a highlight story like the EPL or he would go and do like a Chiefs story, very rarely would he have the opportunity to go and do a Chiefs story that he's had in the back of his mind. And it's a two-part thing where you'll see them now. You're like, he'll do the Dragon's Den one, and that's like 6-7 minutes long over 2 nights.
Yeah.
But that's – so it was very much – like we'd do like bog swamp swimming. There was a sports news TV. There was a provider that Sky signed up for, and they'll do all the bullshit British sports.
Oh, yeah.
They'll do the cheese rolling. Yeah. They'll do the caravan racing. They'll do the bog swamp swimming. And we'll just have that at the end of the show as pure filler, having fun with it. But then we'd rip stories from SportsCenter, like a 3-minute story, because we technically weren't allowed to, but it would fill a half hour show. It would work.
Because the filling is probably the hardest part of it. I mean, it's cool that when Super Rugby and League is going on, it's fucking easy.
Yeah.
Because there's so much to do. But when there's nothing before that, and netball hasn't started up, or you know, maybe the cricket's going, but that's a one day ODI thing. But it boggles my mind of how to keep the train moving.
Well, there's a big basketball announcement coming out on the day of the record. We can't really say what it is, but I'm not sure when this is going out. But there's an announcement coming that it's going to be in a window where there's less content for Sky because they don't have the cricket. But so if we didn't have the cricket, Sky, that means Crowd doesn't really have the cricket. So those months where the All Blacks are on an end of year tour, they're not in town. You're like, what else is there going on?
Yeah.
You know? And that's when the smaller sports are like, hey, can we get some love? It's like, oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And you find that's the most fun to bring to light. Like, you know, like boxing and the MMA stuff coming up, because that goes all the way through, all year through. And yeah, it's cool that there's something out there. For a sport. Well, was this like the idea when you first started and you're like, I'm going to be a broadcaster, was sports always going to be that alley for you?
I started out in Dunedin in my uni years doing like funny TV for a TV show called Cow TV, right? And that started in 1999, and that was started by Clark Gayford. And that was his internship from broadcasting school. So I met Clark in my first year, and then he went off to broadcasting school and came back because he had this idea to do a student lifestyle half-hour weekly magazine-style show on the local, what was back then, Channel 9, and it was Channel 39. I think it's gone now. But it was great. We had a lot of fun. My other co-host, Marcus, who's still one of my best mates, Marcus Sontag, he would go out and do the Walker Show. So he would go out on Sunday mornings and interview people literally walking from other people's flats home and then interview them on the street, which you can do. But there were some risque questions like, how was he out of 10? Or how was she out of 10?
Yeah.
How big was he? Like measuring on a microphone, tell me when to stop. Like just stuff you can't really get away with now on TV.
Yeah.
Like, especially, but we were doing it. We were young and dumb and having fun. So, and then I did another year of that, but that went from half an hour magazine style show to live at 10 p.m. for I think it was an hour, 5 days a week.
Okay.
And there were a lot of times where I was just like live on air by myself because the guest wasn't there and the phone wasn't working. We had a phone line and that was like, maybe that would ring. Maybe there was someone watching.
Fuck. That sounds fun.
It was fun. That's how I cut my teeth.
Yeah, because I mean the unpredictability of phone lines.
Yeah.
And also that kind of content beforehand. Yeah. That sounds like back in the day would have been the shit. Now, so much red tape.
Yeah.
You'd be like, oh, you can't say that. You can't do that. I mean, I kind of push boundaries a little bit here and there, but there's no way I could have. I mean, it would have been fun for social media, but anywhere else would have been like, nah, sorry, you can't say that.
Yeah.
Did that change quite a bit? Have you seen like a massive change with that content from when you started and then when crowd started and then now, like in terms of what you can say, how you angle, what angle you're going with? Because I look at people, I always look at like Lee Hart, right? And I think, fuck, that's genius what he did.
Yeah.
And like, but how could I do that in today's world? And it's not that it's so out the gate.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh, that's, you're bordering, you're teetering on dangerous areas there.
Yeah, I think you can get away with more back then on TV because there wasn't, unless you caught it and you were absolutely offended, and you took the time to complain and had that backed up, there's still that process there, but it's pretty swift, brutal justice online. If you put it up online, you're getting done. Like you're getting the social justice warriors coming out, and sometimes rightly so.
Yeah.
You know, and nowadays, as you know, online is a wild space for opinions and people's takes. And how you deliver and how you view content and what's okay for somebody is not okay for somebody else. So, yeah.
Because I notice in the comments, especially YouTube comments for the crowd, me and you get it the worst. I get it a lot and I'm like, damn, man, it's chill. But I think we all get it, but there's a lot of people that are just like, hey, this isn't the traditional sport media that I'm used to.
Yeah.
Yeah, from middle New Zealand, I suppose.
But also like, come on, bruh. This has been going for 18 years. Like we have adapted and survived for 18 years. Like if this isn't your cup of tea, then go away.
Yeah.
Go somewhere else. Go watch something else. Like if you're on YouTube and you're in the comment section saying, I don't like this, that's on you for spending your time, wasting your quote valuable time commenting on something you don't like when you're on YouTube. You're on YouTube. How many videos are on YouTube that will suit your style of humor? Like, your algorithm is either A, cooked, or you're not very good at the internet. So get off it. Like, honestly, get off the internet. Use your time usefully.
Like, I think one of the best communities, I suppose, like, in terms of online stuff is The Rock, is the Morning Rumble stuff, especially TikTok. People, fuck, it's so good. And it's like what we said before, do you just get, like, free reign, you and Bryce and Rog just get free reign to, and Mal as well, I should say, that just go. Like, there's no real, there's not a lot of constriction as other stations are.
Yeah, I actually think it's the other way. I think we have to be, there's more of a discerning eye cast on the what the Rock says, because it's supposed to be this, and it is a male-skewed, bogan-centric station.
Yeah.
And you just can't get away with saying certain stuff. Whereas if you look at some other radio stations who are pretty big as well, their content is like, what they say on air, like, is like, we could never say that. Because there'd be, there are people who will focus in on what we say and then actually take umbrage with it compared to other brands who will say some really ropey, dicey stuff. And we'll go, so come on, man, that's double standards. Like, I'm happy for you that you're in that space saying these things on air.
Yeah.
But if we did that, whoa, geez, it'd be a ton of bricks would come down on us. Not saying it's right or not saying it's wrong.
Well, like, that's the thing, right? With radio, if you're not, there's a saying, if you're not getting complaints, you're not doing it.
Yeah.
Right. You're not doing it properly.
I'm going on Crowd and Morning Rumble and I'm saying things because I know it's going to provoke some of a reaction.
Mm.
Like, if we put the stuff up that Mark Richardson would say on Crowd Goes Wild
and
that went on YouTube, goodness me, our Facebook page back then was, and it's a big Facebook page now, but we don't really spend a lot of time utilizing that because now Instagram and TikTok is where we're supposed to be in that space. Mm. But he triggered so many people with his takes. And he was just an extension of a character that he portrayed.
Yeah.
But he had so many people up in arms. And it's so entertaining to watch people just get really angry. I would enjoy it. But now there's the space where you have to be triggering people in the comment sections to actually get a little bit of traction. And that's now deemed as good engagement. It doesn't matter what type of engagement, what the tone of the engagement is, but you just, these people who complain are just numbers now. They were like, look at the spike, look at the reach, look how it's climbing. Like, you can complain, but I'm sorry, but you're actually part of the good plan.
Yeah, you've helped us out a little bit.
Yeah.
Because you see it so, you see on, especially on TikTok more than anything, you know, people that go on and that have been doing what Rigger did years ago, but they'll go on and just say something out, like just to get a reaction and then, hey, I'll just wash my hands from that, boom, on to the next one. But you see the engagement just go, whew, spiking like what you said.
And that was the whole point. It's like any dynamic relationship on air is that you have to have the other side of the agreement because you can't go, oh, I agree with you, Mark. You're absolutely right. Because then it's like you're outraging people anymore. You have to have the moral side that's the opposite or else it's just it's so agreeable, it's disgusting. And it's unwatchable.
Yeah. With working with Rigger on Crowd for so long, that dynamic between that, you say it's a character. Like, I don't see your side as a character. That's just who you are. Knowing you, that's who you are. But was there any times where you were just like, damn, he's playing that heel character so well right now?
Yeah, he'd get me so wound up some days. And it was like perfectly played. And I'd play up on it, but I was always am the straight person. But because we don't really have that anymore on Crowd, I have to be a little bit more, not rigorous, but just like a little bit more provocative in the way you say things and just have fun. Like, you can't get up in arms too much from Crowd Goes Wild and what we say on it because it's sport. It's supposed to be, and a lot like the Morning Rumble, it's supposed to be you're at a bar, Lena, at a table with mates, and you want to be a part of that conversation because it looks like they're having a good time. That's basically my whole broadcasting career summed up. You want to be a part of that conversation. You want to have fun and it's inclusive.
Mm.
You know, you shouldn't be offended. And if you are offended, it's a reflection on you as opposed to the way that we're delivering it.
What's one of the most, like, when you were working with Rigger on Crowd, what's one of the most polarizing things that was, I don't want to say said, but one take that you were just like, oh, like, shit, he just went there? Oh,
that's a good question.
It must have been a lot.
I don't really. There were so many times when I was like, oh, it was so absurd that he said it. It was actually funny, and I think he had to. I was away at the Olympics in London, and he went on and said he had to apologize to the country of Korea because of something he said about their fencer who staged a protest and sat down, and I was just like, You've angered the entire Korean community here, not just here, but because it's on Facebook. You now have to apologize. to a career. And he also, there was also a time when Nick Willis, one of our great middle distance runners, admitted to pornography. And he admitted to watching pornography, I think.
Okay. Which, hey, man, everybody does that. Sheesh. Okay, yep.
But that was the thing. He admitted to it. And it was like, he said like, oh, once or twice a week. And every other, most men were like, bro, come on now.
As the kids say, that's cap. I'm calling cap.
Yeah, I'm calling cap. Okay. And then we ran this clip of this commentator who did an excellent job of using all the right puns and adjectives to describe him finishing a race.
Oh.
The climax is here.
Oh, mate.
It rolled off the tongue and Rigger got the giggles, which set me off because when he giggled, it set me off. And I just remember giggling so hard. I was just like, please don't. I literally said, please don't do this. Please don't do this to us. And that, it wasn't absurd and wasn't like, oh, geez, you shouldn't have said that, but it was one of the most fun moments I've had on air. And that went viral.
Was it like 18 years now, right?
18 years, yeah.
A lot of people have come and gone, you know, like, but you're still there, man.
Yeah.
Still, you and McConey.
But this is my dream job. Like, this is how, if you'd said to me, I only thought Crowd was going to last 2 years. And I thought us getting a second year was like, wow, they made a mistake here with the budgets. But anyway, here we go. So for it to be 18 years, like this is, I've had an unbelievably privileged and lucky existence to keep doing the job I do. People still go, is Crowd Goes Wild still on? And I'm like, yeah. And go, are you still doing it? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, wow. And I don't know if I take that as like a, you're still doing that? Or as like, wow, I didn't think it would last. Yes to both of them.
Yeah.
But this is my dream job. Yeah. A lot of people think that you should just want to go and do reality TV or go and read the 6 p.m. news. I mean, that's like a prestige job. Don't get me wrong. Mm. Like Haley does it. Sav does it. Gordy does it. You know, it's amazing. Like that's a big audience. But I kind of feel like you got your 8 minutes there and you're not allowed to have a lot of fun.
Mm.
I'm having fun for 30 minutes. And for most nights, it was 4 nights a week for me. It was 5 nights when we started.
Yeah.
Like that, it's my dream job. Yeah. I'm so lucky.
I have to check myself sometimes too. So I'm like, this is so much fun to do. I was talking to Sean, shout out to Sean, who's our, he's one of the camera guys there.
Sean Crossan.
Yeah, shout out to the Shrek brother from Scotland. But I was just like, bro, we were driving to the Warriors and I'm like, man, if I got to talk to my 12-year-old self, say, bro, like you get a job, you get to just drive to and go and talk shit with the Warriors or the Blues. Like you'd think I'm lying.
But when they see you walk in with your camera sock and it says Crowd Goes Wild on it,
yeah. You
see how they change?
Oh,
you've seen how the athlete changes from when it's the Red One News pop sock or the News Hub pop sock or the Radio New Zealand. And then they see like Crowd Goes Wild on your microphone.
They're like, oh, it's almost like a weight is off their shoulders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, what are we doing? What are we doing today, Timmy?
Fucking yeah.
How are we talking today?
What have you got?
What are we talking about?
You got a flute? That was one of the ones I did the other day. You've got a flute? What are you going to do with the flute, Tim? And I'm like, oh, I'm going to heal you with this flute. And they're like, I love the challenge of coming up with shit.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's just like, I look at what McConey does and I just think, fuck, man, that's fucking next level. I need to get there somehow. And just figuring out ways to include athletes and make it fun and make it also viewable for, you know, the audience. Because, I mean, sometimes, you know, I mean, traditional media, it's the same thing, right? I'll stand here, I'll ask you this question. But when it's got a little bit of a switch to it, they switch too.
It's a difficult time for traditional media as well.
Yeah.
And I think, excuse me, we definitely noticed on Crowd Goes Wild, there was definitely a move away from being the stiff delivery of the news to just loosen up a little bit. You know, there was a little bit more of a, hey, it is just sports news.
Mm.
Like it's a professional job that these athletes have lived all their lives for and trained all their lives for and want to make a great career out of. But at the end of the day, it's just sport. And so we're telling you what the sport is happening and this is our take on it.
Yeah.
Like there was a movement away from just being the uptight.
Yeah.
I mean, I learned all my sports presenting skills from SportsCenter watching it as a kid. and seen how much fun that Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann had, and like Stuart Scott and those guys, and the way they delivered Scott Van Pelt, like the way he has his own sports center, which is different to what the 6 p.m. was. The 6 p.m. one is from when they have the two seated presenters, and then now it's him. And he's got his guy Steve, but it's just a lot more relaxed. Like that's even more fun.
Yeah, because I look at like Pat McAfee at the moment, and I just think that's the next wave. I reckon
it is, but he was already doing it.
Yeah, like, yeah. Like, you don't need a network. You just do it on YouTube, and you make it as fun as you can, and you call as much network as you can in, and you make your own shit. Now, I don't think. I mean, I look at it and then he sold it to ESPN and it made fucking millions of dollars. But
85 mil.
Fuck.
Man, 85 US.
Shit.
But can you sit through an entire Pat McAfee show?
No.
No, neither.
No. But those little bite-sized clips, I'd chow those up in a heartbeat. Yeah, I want to know why The Rock's on there and what's he doing and why is, you know, why is Aaron Rodgers on that and nowhere else?
Yeah.
You know, but. You get those little bite-sized pieces, but that's what the internet, that's what media is now.
Mm.
Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. That's why ESPN paid all that money for him. They realized that it was eyeballs moving away from the traditional linear TV, terrestrial TV, which I think it's going to be an overcorrection, but I think that we haven't adapted enough in New Zealand media to take on what we've seen move away into that YouTube space and social media space.
Because a lot of times, you know, mainstream media will go, okay, we'll do this and then we'll just let it go on YouTube. Just, oh yeah, the other way. Whereas Pat McAfee, for those that don't know, Pat McAfee, he was a punter for the Indianapolis Colts, but he was just a funny dude. Like that was his whole thing, right? And then he
didn't talk like an NFL player.
Yeah.
That's his charm. He wears a tank top, you're right.
Yeah.
He wears a tank top and he was accomplished enough for him to have the pulling power of being able to get the Aaron Rodgers to come in and get those NFL players because they know it's that safe space.
Yeah, because that's safe spaces where I'm kind of like, I figured it out real early because I would watch and I'd say, okay, well, why do athletes or people relate with me and what's the difference there? And it's really just being... like vulnerable, I suppose.
Yeah.
Like I'm like, yeah, I fuck up. I'm normal like everybody else, and so can you. Did you find that with a lot of athletes that you had to, you know, because they turn into this PR kind of person. A lot of athletes, some sports more than others. Yep. I have to say, like rugby's probably the hardest cookie to crack, I suppose, because they're very, you know, rigid. But did you find that with you know, doing crowds so much that the rugby players are the hardest to. Kind of get a...
The two best times that you'll ever get a rugby player is the first 6 to 12 months of their professional careers.
Okay.
Where they haven't adapted to how they actually are supposed to be media trained and taken on board what they've been told. Because they've been told a lot of stuff. And then they're the most open and real and fun. And then you see them change and they get shark eyes. They're dead. They just trot out the same stuff and they look at you and you're like, oh, man, that's a shame. And then you'll come back 8 years later and they're just like, oh, you're back. You're much more fun.
Oh.
You want to have fun and you're a little bit more circumspect, but you know how to deliver a soundbite. Like an example of that is Dane Coles. Dane Coles has always been fun. He's been always been up for it. But he, at the end of his career, he just gave some really great, honest answers because he knew how to answer them.
Mm.
TJ Pettinato has always been that player. And he gave a great example of when recently he got asked, he said it on his Instagram story where he had a journo ask him 10 to 15 rugby questions. And the last one was about the Hurricanes Poa doing their haka and being political about their haka, which I was like, good stuff. You've absolutely used that haka because we can't just mainstream hakas and make it be, hey, look at us. It's a performative gesture before a rugby game and everybody loves it. But TJ said, I got asked those questions and then I got asked about the poa and the haka and I was honest, but that's the only thing you heard in the media about it. Like that's the trap.
Yeah.
There's a trap. They set a trap. They set you up and they get your questions and they ask you these questions and then they'll just wait until you've warmed up and you've been worn down and then they ask you the bait question.
Because I feel like that in itself. That's a great, and that's a great thing there. Oh, well, that's a great analogy of what is. So it makes my job so much fucking harder.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I'm just here to have a good time, ask a couple of questions about the sport, and then just see who you are as a person, right? But then all of these, you know, athletes are kind of like, ooh, this might get me in trouble. When I'm, man, I'm just trying to have some fun. I'm not trying to go, oh man, tell us about such and such, you know? And it's so much harder.
Yeah. You just got to, I think you have to make sure that they're comfortable. That we found that at Crowd in the early days is like, oh yeah, I don't know about that because I don't want you to have people laugh at me. I don't want you to set me up and I'm the joke. It's like, no. Like we'll have the fun at our expense. We'll make you the star. And we didn't get it right all the time in the beginning, but the sooner that they realize that they're going to be the star, like if they don't want to sing and dance, that's fine. You know which athletes will do that,
yeah,
and will do the fun stuff, and which athletes won't. You understand that?
Like
just personality types in all walks of life.
Yeah, and you need to do your research. You understand who it is.
Yeah.
I did a story with James Fisher-Harris in Penrith.
It was awesome.
Yeah. And then I said, there's one line I said in there. I was like, oh, bro, where's the picture books? Hey, boys. That's all I said. The comments. Why are you trying to make him look dumb? Like, you know, like, and I was like, oh, shit. Nah. It wasn't like that. But it's always that. And it's always like, there's always going to be all these people that are going to be like, no. You know, like, fucking, just, but it's the people that you do it for that had a laugh. That's the main one. And Fish had an amazing time.
Yeah. I mean, those people who go, oh, they're just waiting.
Yeah.
They're just watching for something that they can go, come. And I thought, what's the point here? What are you trying to achieve if you're a commenter?
What athletes have you seen throughout your time at Crowd where you've just been like, let's go like top five, maybe top 10, if you've got a couple of the good ones. I'm not saying the bad ones, but the ones you're like, yo, I know that dude will give, this is going to be a good story because of this person.
Oh, yeah. Maconey has this incredibly great relationship with the Chiefs. And so he's always going to get the best out of like the likes of Brad Weber, Brody Retallick, Angus Ta'avau. But then also like, Storm Purvis would also get the best out of the netball players because she has the relationship as a former player and they'll do stuff. Like Laura Langman, Maccone getting Laura Langman to do Langnam styles to Gangnam styles and like getting them to all dance.
That's the most Maccone thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he does that. It's always with a song.
Yeah.
That's his first go-to. It's a song somehow. Yeah. And I'm like, damn, that was amazing.
Yeah, you got to believe in the creative genius that is Maccone getting the, because you have to understand as a viewer that you can't just roll in and expect them to jump. You have to prep them before and say, here are the lyrics. Here's what I'm thinking. I'm not going to make you look stupid, but just follow my lead and we'll get this done and you'll end up being a star. And I imagine that's a lot of people will talk about to them. Like, so yeah, in terms of athletes like that, like, athletes like Sean White, the Flying Tomato, the US snowboarder.
Oh, yes.
Like he had come to town and he was play ball. Maccone dyed his hair to look like Sean White. That is commitment to the cause, Tim.
Yes.
You have to do something like that.
I do, man. I need to think, who could I, maybe Dom Kelso. I'll get the pink thing going on.
Yes.
I'll do something like that. But, you know, it's just that kind of stuff. Like, that's different from anywhere else you get it. And do you think that's why Crowd has been gone, has kind of the test of time? It's kind of matured, I suppose, is because it's not sport serious. It's not a comedy series. Mm. It's like right in the middle.
It's sportainment.
Mm.
We used to do a sports show called Sports Hour on TV3. Nathan Rarity and Oscar Keitley hosted it. They are two incredible, talented people. And I was very lucky to be in that realm where they worked and see how they did it and used the language because they brought that sports centre style to New Zealand. They were doing Super Rugby, free-to-air Super Rugby coverage on TV3. They were doing the Sports Hour show that lasted 2 years where there was high-quality, highly produced weekly magazine style. It was like a precursor to Crowd Goes Wild, except Crowd was spread across 5 nights. But we were doing these shows where you would have highly produced, slick looking sports stories. I remember doing a sports story and going to interview Maz Quinn, the surfer, and going down and then like making it look as rock and roll as possible because you're just doing this high quality sports show. And I remember finding out that Maz Quinn absolutely loved the treatment he got because he was like, holy shit, you used this cool rock and roll music. I was in like the new Queens of the Stone Age. This is like over 20 years ago. And their album had come out and I used that and he was just like, holy shit, that's cool. I've never had that before because he might have just been on the news.
Yeah.
Like he just might have had a Maz Quinn is a local Gisborne surfer. He now lives in Raglan or whatever and now he's going to try and take on the best in the surf tour.
But then it's the effort that you put into it, right?
Yeah.
You're like, I'm going to put a little bit of, you know, I'm going to do some research here. I'm going to put a little bit of effort in here to see how it works out. And it goes a long way.
But so Crowd came about because New Zealand needed a show that had fun but presented sport differently from what you just watched at 6 p.m. And it was 8 minutes long, maybe up to 13 minutes long if it was a Sunday night because everything happens over a weekend. But there was nothing else on there that was going to, on New Zealand TV at the time in 2006 that was going to tackle sport weeknightly that would give you an insight. And it was always set up to be a shop front window on Prime, which is now Sky Open, to be, hey, this is the Sky Sports stuff. So if you would like to subscribe and see more, this is where you can go.
A teaser.
Yeah, it was a taster. And that's why it's lasted so long. It's because it's subscriber money.
Yeah.
For, you know, we'll just pull the curtain back. It would never have lasted on TV3 or TVNZ. I know that there were some people at TV3 who, and maybe TVNZ, who would love to have something like that, but it would never fit in their regular schedule just because it was a little bit too, dare I say, left field, which is Left Field Productions, which is Rick Salizzo, who started it, who got given the reins, the money by Sky to produce it. And like his experience was amazing for us to be able to survive the very rough few years that we did and then started to hit our straps. Once we were comfortable in doing what we were doing and we were actually accepted a little bit more, because it wasn't easy, it was rough.
Mm-hmm.
Like the papers wrote shit stuff about us and they were like, what is this? Because it was so different to what they expected it to be. Because if they were going to be a sport show, why are you treating sport like that? You've been given this opportunity to do half an hour. Why can't we have it a bit more serious and be, you know, and really do sport the way it's deserved? It's like, no.
You've got a whole, well, I mean, what? Yeah, because, I mean, you've got a whole Sky Sport channel. Can we just get 30 minutes where you can have a laugh?
Yeah, and our biggest audience, you won't believe this, but we sat in that meeting recently, and our audience are 18-year-olds and to 35-year-olds. Yeah. Like, that's a very hard market to corner. And it's household shoppers, and it's females.
Mm.
Like, why would we want to serve old white men who write newspaper columns?
Ah, yes.
You've already got that.
They've got a platform.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Get off your typewriter. Get into something else. Yeah. Like, there is a place for us because there's been a place for you this whole time.
Because I think, coming back to Rick a bit, because I was brought up on Sports Cafe, right? Because it was free.
Yeah.
And that was because I don't have Sky, but I knew that if I tuned my TV into the right place, that at 7 o'clock on this night, you can watch just a little bit of Sky. Yeah. And it was Sports Cafe and it was Mark Ellis.
Yeah.
And Mark Ellis for me was the guy. I was like, damn, he's funny and he's himself. How much of Sports Cafe and how much of it did you find when you first started Crud? Because Rick was part of both. Did it kind of blend in, or was there bits like, oh, this, it kind of worked well together?
To Rick's credit, right, he never said you have to have a Mark Ellis on five nights a week on Crowd Goes Wild. There was no, like, he saw Rigger do the skit with Stephen Fleming that went viral. I'm talking like 2005 with Stephen Fleming, where Stephen Fleming absolutely ripped Rigger out. And it's a funny story. So Rigger set up the story with Stephen Fleming at the end of a test match. for the cricket show that Rigger was doing that was on Sky Sport. And he just asked Stephen Fleming to rip him out for a question. Yeah. And Stephen Fleming absolutely delivered because he knew he could rip Rigger because Rigger was that guy in his team.
Yeah.
Like 2000 to 2004, Rigger was the dogged opener who had three shots in cricket and he would average 44.77. And the rest of the team were like, yeah, Rigger, he's just a little bit different. So he got Stephen Fleming to play along and they recorded it in the truck. But what no one realised is that, well, not very few people realised is that that feed was going back to India. Because India had, they loved their cricket, obviously. Yeah. They had the feed going. And somebody saw Stephen Fleming, New Zealand captain, ripping his former teammate out, Mark Richardson. And I'll say that sometimes across cultures, sarcasm and delivery is taken differently.
Yes, yes.
And so this went huge. And so they didn't realise that it was a joke, but they were just recording it in the truck for them to clip it off and give it to the cricket show.
Yeah.
And they use it in their cricket show.
And so that went viral.
That went huge. That was funny. And Rick obviously saw that and was like, oh, there's something special about Mark Richardson. He's a little bit different. He's prepared to put himself out there. He's the guy who ran in the beige suit at the end of a cricket series in the onesie and raced the slowest person on the Australian team, which I think was Darren Lehman at the time, former Aussie cricket coach. Like he had prepared to do that to himself.
Yeah.
So he knew that he had prepared to do something on air five nights a week. So that's how we got Rigger.
Because it's quite interesting, like a lot of people will try and cut and copy what worked and just go, that worked there, it's going to work over here. And that doesn't always work.
No. And Rick had the foresight. Like I was already at Sky when Crowd was started and we had a show called Sport 365, which was literally the sports news show over the weekend from, say, Friday to Monday night. It was the sports show that Sky Sport did, and it was straight as, straight down the middle. And I was working on that. I was producing it. And that budget for that show was going to be given to Crowd Goes Wild, to Rick, to come up with the show. And so he used me to audition people for the job I eventually got. So I sat there, and I had these people come in, and we ran these auditions through in this other venue in off Merrill Drive. I can't remember what it was called now, but I had all these people come through and I sat there and I didn't realise. I was just happy to have a job and work on a new TV show that was more in my wheelhouse than it was what I was working on. And anyway, so we were doing these auditions and then he rings me a couple of days later and he just goes, you know what? And he was familiar with what I was doing at TV3 because he had done some stuff with TV3 as well. And I had done a couple of things for Sports Cafe that never made it to air, but he knew about me and he was always looking because he's really good with his eye for talent and helping people and finding people that are a little bit different. And he just said to me, he goes, you know, you can do the job because what I saw that you were a lot better at doing that job than these people were.
Ah.
And I was like, I'm sorry, what?
Oh, wow.
And that's how I got Crowd Goes Wild. I never actually auditioned for the job.
But he just knew.
He had the eye.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm forever indebted to Rick Sulitzo and his ability to find people.
How, between when you started and having to do that and then starting to do interviews, was there a moment when you're like, how can I explain it? Like you're in the room and you're just like, man, I shouldn't be here? Like you know, like,
fucking. Oh, imposter syndrome?
Yeah, but when you started, when did that kick out?
Yeah. That's incredibly hard to overcome. And I was very raw at the beginning of Crowd. So a little bit, you're almost defensive on air because you're having to prove yourself. I've got no sporting pedigree. Mm. I'm not Mark Ellis. Like, and then back then, that's what people really wanted. They wanted the fun. They wanted that rugby head, taking the piss, having a good time on the beers. But that's not going to wash at 7 p.m. on free-to-air TV. Mm. You can't do that. And to Rick's credit, like I said, he wasn't going to go and try and find and replicate that Mark Ellis. You just can't bottle that up. He's like, he's iconic for a lot of people in sports TV in New Zealand. So he left Mark and I alone. Mark and I took a while to work out what we were, but the one thing that helped me as a presenter is that Mark actually left for 7 weeks to go to the World Cup in 2007. So we'd been on air maybe barely a year. And I had these other ex-sports people like Simon Dool and Tanya Dalton and the like come through and I would host with them. And that helped me grow as a presenter. So when Mark came back, it was like I actually was comfortable being Because I was the constant.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just Mark being the constant and I was just being this other guy off to the side of him. So it was actually like, that's when it really started to climb.
Okay.
And then Mokone went to the Olympics
in
08 and really became full Mokone, like yelling at Kobe and Team USA men's basketball team. Have you seen any cats? It's like, you can get away with that in 2008. But yeah, I don't think you can get away with that, now. But yeah, so the Mark Ellis thing, like Rick, to his credit, didn't try and replicate that.
Mm. So like Olympics, how many have you been to? You went to London?
London, Rio, Vancouver, the winter Olympics.
Wow.
And going to Paris. That would be four. Yeah.
Four. What's when you go there, because I've never, you know, I was like, oh man, one day I'll go. But
one day, bro.
One day we're in there.
I know.
Come on. Come on.
One day, bro.
Come on, man.
We'll be there, you
Come
and
on,
I.
Me and you, man. But I think, like, how different is that from doing the Olympics, which is a lot of live crosses, I can guess.
Yeah.
A lot of things compared to, you know, like what you do over here.
There's a lot of rough and ready at the Olympics. You are on the fly. Like, there's a lot of, like, standing around and waiting. And then there's a lot of, like, trying to capture the emotional moment of an athlete who's either succeeded. There's varying stages to it as well. There's succeeding, wildly exceeding your expectations and your coach's expectations, but also meeting, falling below your expectations and failing at the athlete's eyes.
Mm.
So you've got to really read the situation. So like, for instance, Valerie Adams, she lost the gold medal. And she fired up at me a couple of years ago when she came around pushing her doco, because the expectation was that Val is going to go back to back in Rio. She got the gold eventually in London because of what happened with the drugs cheat, the Belarusian, the Stupchuk. But she deservedly got that gold. And she was like one of the best, but she lost the gold to the American, Michelle Carter Williams. Anyway, she got the gold and Val got the silver, I think it was. And so so that you've got to, she was very defensive, but she was trying to process what had just happened as well. She was trying to meet her expectation. Her expectations were always to win and win gold. That's the elite athlete.
That's how she gets.
That's how Val.
That's how she is who she is.
Yeah. But she will not suffer fools lightly. She, like most Adams, won't in that whānau. So it was a lot of, I got a lot of hate for saying, but like, you didn't fulfill your expectations. Like, how do you feel right now? And she was like, I won a medal. I'm like, I'm happy I won a medal. But of course, it's awesome. A New Zealand athlete won a medal again. She's a multi medal winning athlete at track and field. Very rarely do we do that. Like, you know, Nick Willis, it's an amazing story. But I got a lot of hate because it was like, she won a medal for New Zealand, you dick.
Yeah.
You know? But it's like, yeah, but it's not the gold. So that's really tough. Like, you've got to find a gray area and sit in that area with the athlete, but also ask a question like, you didn't really meet the expectations that I know that you would hold. And that New Zealand public expect you to have as well.
Do you ever feel that like wording questions is an art form that, you know, like that is overlooked at times? Like just then, you know, where I've been in press conferences where they'll say something, you're like, whoa, you could have worded that a lot easier. That, you know, shows a little bit more empathy, I suppose. But, you know, some people just come off the top with it.
Yeah, they spit it out.
Yeah.
Well, they've probably got it written down, and they've been told by the editor or the producer, you need to ask these questions, these three questions. You know, what's the angle of your story? What are you trying to hit here? Get some emotion out of them, get a reaction. And like, if it's a press conference, there's so many people wanting, and you've seen it, the progression of like the biggest media organization, it'll go Sav. Andrew Saville will start the conference. And then it'll go News Hub, and then it'll go, might go Radio New Zealand, it might go MediaWorks, it might go Stuff, it might go Herald, whatever. But yeah.
And then I'm thinking, I'm at the right, when I'm there, I'm right at the end, and I'm just like waiting, okay, my turn now. And then, but those athletes appreciate the fun that they've They've had to say the same thing 6 or 7 times in a row.
I was nervous during the Tom Abercrombie retirement press conference. I haven't been in a press conference in years now. And I was like, holy shit.
Which I just want to say, you know, I got an apology for that because this guy was like, hey, man, just want to check. I was like, shut up, man. I'm keen.
But like, yeah, I was like, I know you. Yeah. I sort of stepped on your toes on that one. I'm sorry.
You did, man. And I left a bruise. I left a hard bruise, man. No, not at all. When you said that, I was like, fuck, there's no better person to do that. Like, yeah. So, but anyway, sorry.
I appreciate just back that. It was just, yeah, you've just got to be able to prepare yourself with word economy. Don't waffle, don't answer the question in the question.
Mm.
You don't have to fully justify the question.
Yeah.
A lot of people get caught up in justifying the question. I get caught up in justifying the question.
I do that a lot, yeah.
But it's also good, you need to justify the question for the listener or the viewer so they know where you're going with it.
Mm.
So yeah, there is a lot of word economy and learning how to get your point across without answering that point already by asking it.
Oh.
It's tough, man.
It is.
I appreciate like the fact you're on social doing that and learning in front of your followers.
That's
honest to who. Oh, that's the name of the podcast.
That is, man. With basketball, though, coming back to, I mean, for that, when you first got the job to do the Breakers and to do basketball, did you ever think that you and Case would keep going? Like, because I was like, man, I remember when you first announced, I remember on Twitter, you're like, guess what? I've got a huge announcement. I'm going to be doing stuff for Breakers. It didn't get much of a buzz because at that time, you know, Breakers were coming off. And we didn't have a much of a choice, really. So it was great that we had somebody like Casey and then yourself. But did you ever feel that, you know, this will keep going on and on and on?
Nah.
Yeah? How long did you think it was going to go for?
Well, I'd never really called basketball before. I remember calling some of the games for the 09 under 19 World Cup that was here.
Yeah, that was, man, shout out to Clay Thompson.
Yeah, Kelly Olynyk. Thompson.
Man.
Are there any babies that Tristan? Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
A lot like Seth Curry, Sheldon Mack. Mack, I should say.
Dion Prewster.
Dion, Richie Edwards.
Yeah. Shout out to Richie Edwards, man.
Rob Lowe.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
Brooke Roscoe. Brooke, let's go.
That's our guy.
There we go. He was in their team.
Yeah, he was JTB's. No, I didn't know how long that was going to last. But I always thought, oh, you know, fuck it. Just keep going. But no one tells you how to be these things. When we're at Sky, it's probably my little bit of a bugbear is that no one produces you really.
Mm.
You have to learn on the fly and you have to learn by your mistakes.
Yeah.
But I got air checked at the end of the season and I got told the mistakes I was making after the season had finished.
Okay.
And I got really angry at the person who did that.
Was that like for the entire season of like things that you're saying about a player or ways that you'll do it? How did that work?
Just the mechanics of commentary, just the way you're doing things and what you're saying and jargon you're using that might not be relatable to the casual viewer, that might just be basketball things. I was like, come on, man. Where were you in week 4? Where were you in week 9?
So I could have taken that and tried to fix it up.
The greatest thing I love about radio is that we're air-checked every single week. We have a meeting with our boss, Brad King, and he will listen to a show and he'll come in and he'll go, this was loose. This went on too long. You got too much jibber jabber here. You X, Y, Z. Work on these things.
Yeah.
And some of the time you're like, you'll disagree, but at least you're having a robust conversation.
And then you move forward with whatever information you have.
You're getting made to get better.
Yeah.
Like any broadcaster should be asking for feedback from people who are in the industry. It doesn't even have to be in your newsroom or your sports production room. It can be a mentor that you've asked for that you've struck up a relationship. Hey man, just if you've watched that show, if you watched that podcast, what did you think? Did you think it had a structure? Did you think I asked too much? I said too little. I didn't get something out of that person. It's always good. You've got to constantly have feedback.
And it's trust too. Like I trust, there's not that's another thing too. There's not a lot of people that are in that realm. You know what I mean? Of like, I can't just go and ask my bro from high school because he's like, oh yeah, you could, but it would be like, oh, you should have said this more. But it's almost like one thing that really, when Kobe passed away and I wasn't a big, I'm a Knicks fan. I wasn't a big Kobe fan, but Like, there was when he was, like, calling MJ up at 2 o'clock in the morning to ask things.
See, I never knew that. That's amazing, eh? And like, when that came out, I was like, shit, that's cool.
Fuck, and then in my head, I'm like, fuck, I want to do that, but yeah. I feel a bit shame asking people. I feel a bit like, oh, I don't want to disturb people, you know, and I don't know if, you know, they'll take this the wrong way, or I don't know where their mindset is. But, I mean, I've reached out to you hundreds of times and hundreds of replies I get back. And, you know, it's really powerful to open, like for you to open those doors up for your knowledge for somebody like me. It's been really amazing for my growth. So I just want to thank you for that.
Oh, man, you're welcome. But I've never had somebody like yourself ask questions constantly.
Yeah, it's weird, man.
Like, ask for feedback. Like, it doesn't really happen. I've seen, like, in the years that I've been doing this, I've seen people come and go, and they've never really asked for help. And I don't know why. It must be a pride thing, or if you feel like you're admitting that you're not very good, which is not true because you're doing it.
Mm.
Like, you just need to get over yourself.
That's probably what it is.
You just need to get over yourself, be a little bit more self-aware, and just know that everyone can get better. If Kobe's ringing Michael Jordan at 2 a.m. in the morning, and Kobe's one of the most skilled athletes at a sport, so what does that say about you?
Yeah.
And you need to open up a little bit. So to get feedback on the radio like we do is great.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it, even though I make out I don't.
I mean, it comes back from being coachable, I suppose. You know, there's some people that are really coachable, but there's some people that aren't.
Yeah, but that's also a maturity thing as well, isn't it? You know that as being a coach.
Yeah. Which, you know, we could talk about. I could talk about. When I did the PAX episode of the potty, everyone's like, where's the basketball talk, man? Where is it? I'm like, I couldn't do it, eh? Because he left. He opened the door for me to come on to Straight Dribble.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, yep. Nah, he gets out of here. He's redundant when it comes to that shit. It's me now. It's the facts. The facts,
Sardi. PAX has gone on.
Oh, man. But basketball-wise, you've always been a hoop fan growing up?
Yeah, I have. My dad, like, it also helped that my dad was in the sports newsroom of what was back then NZBC and I guess Radio New Zealand, not RNZ as we know it now, but it's the progression of that as what we know now. But he was executive producer of Radio New Zealand Sport and he was there for like 25 years.
Shit.
So as I was a kid, I'd go into the office when I was like, I don't know, 10, 11, 12, and just hang out. And there were these, like, there was Brian Waddle, there's Gary Hearn, there were all these names. Like, there were people coming through those doors that were just like voices that were so familiar to a lot of New Zealanders.
I didn't know that about you. I didn't know that your dad was in the broadcast area as well.
Yeah, mum spent seven, I want to say she only retired last year. She spent 7 decades in radio.
Fuck.
So she started in the 60s and in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and the 1000s and the 10s and the teens, and then just recently she retired. So she started when she was real young.
Fuck, so you're like the Steph Curry of this shit. You know, you're the Steph Curry of sports broadcasting. Just get it by osmosis growing up and then, hey, you're fucking in there.
But I was never in there going, I want to be that. I want to do that. It just, I think subconsciously there were barriers broken down that I could see how the sausage was made.
Yes.
But I subconsciously was watching the sausage get made.
Yeah.
And then but then I went to school at Onslow College in Wellington, which was a school that would let you be yourself and let you be, you didn't have a uniform. It was co-ed. I was in drama class with Taika Waititi. You know, I was with Jackie Van Beek. So, and they were just Taika and Jackie and stuff, and we were just goofing off doing theatre sports and stuff like that. So the performative side of that, I think, was a big part of it as well. And obviously Taika is Taika now, and Jackie's been a weapon as well. So I didn't really expect myself to do what I'm doing now, but if you told me back then I was going to do it, I'd go, fuck off.
Yeah.
There's no way, but here we are.
Fuck, because I come from a totally different background from anything that I'm doing at the moment. And then I look back and I just think, well, growing up, like, fuck, I was always trying to find a way to find out, like, what's happening in the NBA, what's happening in the NFL. Like, it was just something that I was, I found myself doing through cards, basketball cards, slam magazines, all this kind of shit. But there was nothing out there. So I could kind of understand, like, it was in your realm. Like, it was that's how you became almost an outlier to it, is because, oh, fuck, I saw them doing a pre-roll for that. I know these certain little things that a lot of people don't know.
Yeah. And then you see things like Dad would take me on OBs out to Hutt Valley Rec, like the park, and watch softball, and he'd do live crosses back. He'd plug in his little unit, and then you just sit out there at Fraser Park, I think it was, and then wait for them to cross to him and give score updates. But I never thought, I'd never paid attention. I was like, oh, yeah, Dad's got to do the radio. He's got to do his thing.
Yeah.
And then just go, blah, 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 blah. I was like, oh, yeah, cool. But then, like, your Slam magazine, for me, they would get Sports Illustrated airmailed, like, shit, into the office, and no one cared. No one cared. And I was like, so when I discovered basketball, and Dad was calling Saints games with Terry Orchard in the Showgrounds building in Wellington, I'd go along, and that's when I fell in love with basketball, because it was Kenny McFadden, Kerry Boagney, they were winning, it was loud, it was bright lights, it was an atmosphere that you just didn't get at Athletic Park.
Mm.
You weren't getting it at Fraser Park.
Because I think that's what basketball brings. It's a viewer sport. Like, you can view it, and you don't need to know. There's a lot of rules, but you don't. It's whoever's up, who got the most points is going to be winning. There's no kind of a barrier, I suppose.
It's very skillful for kids to pick up.
That too.
Like, I helped coach at my son's 10-year-old team, right? As you know, coaching
which I've
kids,
offered if you need me.
Bro, do you want to? You need to come. I've got training tomorrow. Are you in town tomorrow?
I'll come through.
Because I need help.
Okay, I gotcha.
Because the main coach is away. I'm genuine.
Okay, I gotcha.
But I got a game tonight.
Okay.
But you don't have to be there because it's 6 o'clock on the show.
Man, look at the always fucking. Hey, but you can come to training, but hey, I want to come to the games too, man.
I come to the game, yeah.
I'll be your assistant coach.
Yeah.
I'll be the one that like has to hold you back from the, hey, no, when you go at the refs.
Got my clipboard.
Fuck, there's a lot of people that hit me up like, fuck, bro, you're not like how you used to be as a coach. And I was like, dude, like, I am, but I'm just not competitive right now.
Yeah.
Like, chill the fuck out.
But you got your coach hat on, though.
Yeah, you always do. And so have you learned a lot watching the game that you've kind of put in for coaching your son and stuff?
Yeah, I think, like, it's really hard to explain how to keep his dribble tight and close to his body.
Okay.
Like, it's really, like, he's got a wild dribble, but he goes 100 miles an hour. He is 100% committed to every single play, which I love. But I'm also like, you just need to calm down. But you can't tell a kid to dial it back just yet.
Yeah. You got to let them experiment.
You just got to let them work it out for themselves. Yeah. And that's been the hardest thing as a coach.
Yeah.
An assistant coach is like, you have to calm down. You have to start getting so involved.
Oh, shit. That's been, fucking how many ticks. Have you got a tick yet? That's
no,
what I want to
know. No.
Not at the junior level, man.
I've seen
some junior coaches, and I'm like, fucking settle down.
There's a lot of parents who'd give up their time to be their kid's coach of their team. And full shout out to the tolerance level I see exhibited by some coaches who are just like, even Alvin, who is our main coach of the team. I'm like, he's Canadian, so it's lucky he's got that Canadian demeanor, because his tolerance level, I'm like, you shut up, stop talking, he's talking.
That's enough. Yeah,
that's enough.
Hold the balls, hold the basketballs.
Yeah, stop dribbling.
Yeah,
Alvin's talking.
So basketball-wise, it's getting huge here in Aotearoa. Where's next for not just the NBL, but just basketball in general? I mean, Stephen Adams broke a lot of doorways down. There's a lot of great talent coming through, but what do you think we need to, as a society, I suppose, and even Sky and whoever's broadcasting, where do you think it's going to go next? It's a big question.
I think the next thing is for another Stephen Adams to go into the NBA and another, maybe a Charlie Sledger Walker to go WNBA. Like, I think there's somebody who needs to go into the professional leagues in America to sustain that interest level, because Stephen's been injured last couple of years. He's at the Rockets now. Charlie's has been killing it, but then she got injured. So I think that will help with the mainstream.
Mm.
I think, you've seen it at a youth level. There's not enough courts. Some leagues have had to shut down because they haven't had the availability. So they just go, oh, we can't actually manage how much interest we have. I see so much merch on kids that are NBA. I've seen so many Steph Curry singlets. I've seen Breakers singlets. Like, it's so cool to see.
Easter sales?
Yeah. Like, you're there.
Rebel Sport?
Rebel Sport. No one's got more sports gear.
So I just that was an alley-oop for you, man.
T's and exclusions apply.
That was a D Wade right there, and I was just doing this.
You were like, yeah. But it's like they all know the shoes. My son doesn't want to wear the Jordans. I bought him a couple of pair of retro Jordans. Spent a lot of money. Mm. He doesn't want to wear the retros. He wants to wear the Steph Currys. They're garish. Under Armour. Shout out to Under Armour. But fuck, I'm not buying Steph Curry shoes. I appreciate what you're doing. Puma, New Balance.
Anta is coming out with some Kyries.
Anta, do they have clay? Does clay wear Antas? Yeah, but
I don't even think Clay gets to wear those shoes as much as he should be.
Just leave it to Nike. Sorry. Even Adidas, even the Ant Edward shoes, they're nice.
I like them.
I like them a lot, but I'm not going to wear them.
Oh, okay. If I was playing, I probably would. Hmm. Those Hardens look great.
Yeah.
Those Hardens with the big kind of D on the side, that semicircle.
Yeah.
Sorry, getting shoe talk. Because you're a bit of a kick. You're a bit of a sneaker head.
But I see, I love the nostalgia of it. And I very rarely wear a colorway that strays from the original.
Yeah.
Even when I see Jordan wearing, like, he wore the Grape Fives. When the fuck did he wear Grape Fives? Where did he wear those? What game was that?
That's a purist. You're a purist, man. I respect that.
Yeah, like the All-Star game and stuff. I was like, where did he wear those? Yeah. The Barcelonas and stuff. Oh, okay, I get it. Yeah, I get the colorway. But I'm like, no, I want the Bulls Eastern Conference Game 5 Cleveland Cavaliers shoe. I want that having to get beaten up by Bill Laimbeer shoe. Mm. The old school.
That's the nostalgia kick that Jordan is known for.
The 11s with the patent leather toe.
They're my favorite.
They're my favorite.
So you're going to shit on them, and I was
them in the sixes. You know, with the holes in the tongue.
Yep. Okay. I'm a ones guy, a fours guy, but I'm 11s. 100%. Yeah.
See, I'm a fives guy because they were my first shoe. I made mum
fours
buy them.
Were mine. That's why.
There you go.
It's always I've noticed that.
Yeah.
So when your first pair of Jordans, you always remember the number, and then you ride with those. I had the cement fours. Those were my first.
Yeah. The sixes are the ones where he won his first championship in 91.
That's right. With the two holes on the tongue that you can pull up.
Yeah.
Man, we could talk all day about shoes. Sheesh.
Yeah. I love that. And Last Dance, you know, broadened that appeal.
Did you watch that with your son?
I tried to,
okay,
but he just wasn't interested. I cannot get him to sit down and watch anything. I can't get him to watch a full game of rugby, league, basketball, anything. But he wants to play it. He plays every sport that gets thrown his way, which is awesome, which I think is what it should be about.
Yes.
Yeah, no. But he's actually really good at Fortnite because he started when he was four. That's my bad.
Yeah.
Now my four-year-old has started playing as well. He plays the Zombieland one. And he comes home from daycare and he goes, Daddy, can we play zombies now? Play Fortnite zombies.
Oh.
And he talks trash to them. He talks shit to the zombies.
That would be great. Oh, wow. Okay. Because zombies is like it's a PV. No, like you're not playing against another person.
No, you can go private game. And it's one of those.
Look at you, man. You're fucking educating me. I should be educating you. Sheesh. I don't play that, though. I don't
Do you play Helldivers?
Yes, I do. I'm waiting for the ad, bro. I'm waiting for you to add me on the PSN.
I just don't play enough.
I don't play enough either because I don't have enough friends. Come on.
I'm friends with you on.
No, you're not. We need. Is that us? Are we doing a gaming podcast next where
we take on Chris Key and Guy Mansell?
Yeah, let's do it. We're coming for you guys.
I've forgotten her name and I apologize. I haven't. What's her name?
Ellie Harwood.
Ellie Harwood. Sorry, Ellie.
We're sorry.
Sorry, I haven't met you. I'm sorry. I know Chris and Guy because I work with them. So sorry.
Yeah.
She's both. Great, by the way. Ellie, you're great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let her know. Good. They record in here, eh? Yeah, oh, shit, even worse. Yeah. Don't tell them, Jake.
Jake's going to snitch as soon as they were in.
No,
actually,
Jake, don't write that down,
they're
Jake.
They're actually outside. They're waiting for
us. Are they waiting?
Yeah. Shit. But anyway, bro, that's us. We're going to bring you back on Wednesday for our Goat Busters segment. But thank you so much, man.
You're welcome, bro.
It's been good. We're here now. We're there. We're Arnold name. Schwarzenegger. And
well, I'll add you.
Okay.
I'll follow you.
It's on wax now. You have to.
Frank Podcast.
Chris and Guy from the Extremely Casual Gamers podcast. We're a casual gaming podcast for the everyday gamer.
We chat everything gaming from PlayStation to Xbox to Nintendo to PC, but not like full-on stuff, like super chill stuff, casual stuff, like, oh, if you had to date a video game character, who would you date?
Even if you're just gaming on your mobile, we want to hang out with you. And we've got awesome giveaways for you to win.
Join us every Thursday for a brand new episode. Just search Extremely Casual Gamers wherever you get your podcasts.